picture to how that's going to help you feel more fulfilled. Spirituality as a concept, not as a particular religious view or particular way of life, but maybe the way that you choose to see the world. We hope that you join the conversation and tell us what you value, what your purpose comes from, and what you think of spiritual love. The number here is 895-1114, and we are joined by the wonderful Adam Mose of our community, and he is an acupuncturist as well as a practicing Buddhist, and he is going to be sharing with us his much established wisdom, and we're hoping that any of you that are listening would like to call in and add to that conversation. So stay tuned, it's coming up soon. And I did not get that to play, so we are going to go right into a song from Miss Jackie DeShannon. What the world needs now is love. Very perfectly suitable for us.
It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world for everyone. Lord, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. There are beans and moonbeams enough to shine. Oh, listen, Lord, if you want to know. Oh, 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 it's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, oh, but just for everyone.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. It is Love in the 21st Century, talking about spiritual love. Thank you so much, Adam, for joining us.
I'm just so delighted to be here with you.
Yes.
And wanted to make it really basic and coming out in terms of action and activity that we engage in. So the perspective I'm coming at it from is a particularly Buddhist one. That's just been my orientation for the last 30 years. You know, I had a Buddhist course of philosophy in my undergrad. Completely changed my life. You know, it's just like coming home is how it felt. Like what the philosophy was about seemed to be things that I had already understood or realized, and then was hearing, you know, like put in a language and able to be put in a type of a vocabulary that was at once kind of immediate, but then also precise. So we like precision in this kind of thing and more concrete. So really what we mean by love, loving, is to want the other happiness. To want the other, the whoever it is we are loving, to have happiness. And it's just like easier almost initially to practice on the other, to want the other's happiness and to see that as important, and to do whatever one can, you know, intelligently to help that come about. And then, like, you just kind of come along for the ride. You know, it happens to, you're like, you want to extend that first to your beloved. You extend that to the others that you genuinely love. You know, you want them to have happiness.
Right.
Then you can expand that to your larger community, wishing them happiness, seeing them as happy. And then including, you get the spiritual love in the Buddhism is including all the beings, seeing that all beings want happiness. All beings have the right to
access happiness,
establish that for themselves in their lives, and that, you know, you happen to be one of them. You're going to come along for the ride as well.
Absolutely. So you said that you first began studying Buddhism 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Was there something that was a predecessor to that? Was there something that you were seeking? Because what I found in the different aspects we've been talking about with self,
yeah,
that there usually is something that begins that path for somebody,
yeah,
that they were seeking. And
yeah,
so maybe for our listeners, you could share with them what kind of led you there.
I think it was about mind, consciousness, or creativity. That when we're talking about the self, the first thing that we encounter is like our own state of consciousness, that we are a conscious being. Then, you know, it's like this first kind of obvious thing.
Right.
And you mentioned about the spiritual self in Buddhism. They would, you know, there's different names for it in all the different faiths and philosophical orientations. Buddhism, they talk about Buddha nature, which is basic to everybody, everything, everyone. If they have a mind, they have a Buddha nature. It's like the basis of what a mind is, and it's the seed or the potential for complete awakening. So this awakening is like my big pursuit, the passion, the motivation is seeing that the suffering is what the beings don't want, what I'd like to be able to dial down in my own experience, and learning from the suffering, not just going numb to it, denying it or whatever. It's like facing it and working through it, then I'm gaining the wisdom from that little pain, saying, hey, your attention wants to go here. And getting to that point where that spiritual self that is the potential for awakening, that's coming out, that's being expressed, that's informing who you are more and more.
So through those practices, you know, I feel like it comes up. Does it get easier to deal with sort of the pains that you're bringing up, the things that life sort of throws at you, if you will?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. And the thing is, like, I don't notice it. I don't, it's like I always see the next challenge, the next thing I have to integrate. But then when I really look back, like who I was those years ago, it's like there has been a lot of evolution. It's been work, you know. It's like this constant joyful effort. And this is the other bit, how the love in Buddhism, again, we like precision. We also like lists. So there's four. The love is this one of the four that go together. And love, in we're talking that technical sense of wanting the other's happiness. We want to be able to have our love received by the other. And so I just also wanted to put this out to the folks who are listening in, this thing of sometimes receiving someone's love, being able to be like the genuine open recipient of someone else's love is the biggest gift you can give to them. That part of it, that we all love, to have our love being received,
right,
that feeling is so satisfying. And then the part that comes in in romantic love and all the complexities that we put upon expectations about romantic love means that there's going to be bumps and misconnects, and sometimes love not being received, then the other, you know, they can't come out of their suffering just by us wanting their happiness.
Right.
It's like it's not a simplistic idea. It's like then the compassion, that's the second one of the four. The compassion has to kick in, and we're like, not only do I want the happiness of the other, but I want to be able to help them get free of what's keeping them from their happiness. Which is kind of an inside job for everyone, you know, finding your own happiness. It can't be derived from how we can change the world outside.
Indeed. That's definitely one of the struggles I feel like a lot of people, many people, is we are constantly looking externally from ourselves to find that happiness.
But the joyfulness, this thing that it's really, really available within you all the time, this like base level of joyfulness about just living and sharing in the achievements of others, sharing in their happinesses that they're finding, whatever it is, you know, however it is, they're going about discovering their happiness, sharing that joyfulness is the third. And the fourth is the equanimity. And we were talking about that kind of sideways at the beginning, where we were saying, oh, first we're working on love by loving the other and seeing their happiness as important. And then we start to expand that and put it to the others who are more removed in our community. We want their happiness. Then we make the leap and we say, oh, even those who have the difficult karma with us, you know, who are supposedly in opposition to our happiness, we want their happiness as well. And that equanimity is like, if it's a being, deserves happiness. And we're working to subdue the biases and the prejudices that might color our vision of the other.
If you have a question and you're tuning in, we're talking with Adam Mose about spiritual love and the self. Our number is 895-1114, and we are here ready to include you in the conversation. I do want to ask you a couple questions, though, from what you were just sharing. So what does your practice look like, maybe on a daily basis? You did talk about how the evolution of yourself, you know, you looking back, you know, the progress has been there, but, you know, in the process of looking at it, maybe it doesn't seem so grand until you look back over time.
Yeah.
But what does that practice look like, you know, on a daily basis for somebody that's listening in right now, besides just, you know, taking up a meditation practice today? You know, what are some tips that you could share with them?
There's a lot of study. I mean, the Buddha taught for 40 plus years, you know, in like this super high fidelity. So there's stacks and stacks of discourses, you know, and the Buddha said to not take what he says on faith, or anyone for that matter, but to apply your own reasoning and to apply it to your own experience and see if it's applicable to you. So it's meant to be a very practical philosophy that way. And my own practice has very much evolved over the years. It was so hard. It's like so crazy hard to like, and my first idea was like, oh, a perfectly still mind, no thought, you know, that's what meditation is. And then I'm beating myself up for like sitting there trying to not think. Lots of luck.
Right.
But then I met really wonderful teachers. That was the thing. And, you know, great living masters like this one, amazing Master Hua. He's a Chinese Chan master, and he was in his 90s, you know, when I met him, and came from mainland China. And, you know, they sit meditation. He sat meditation for 3 years on his mom's grave, you know, when she passed away. reflecting on impermanence, and, you know, I met him 40 years later, 50 years later, but he was, you know, like this One thing that really stands out with him was prostration. This is something in the Eastern culture, like the reverence, you know. Like if there's someone we respect, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, let's go out and have a beer together and hang out. But there's like this kind of reverence and that letting go of my big important self at that point was an amazing lesson from him. And then I met Zen master Jakushu Kwang Roshi. So Zen meditation became really strong for many, many years. And then I started to meet tantric teachers, first in the West, like hidden in the West, and then official tantric teachers like His Holiness the Dalai Lama, the Vajrayana style Buddhism then became my main focus. So it was Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana. These are like huge schools of practice and study within Buddhism. It's just so wide. It's not one size fits all. So
it sounds very vast in terms of the possibilities and what you sought out in terms of learning. And so for those that are listening, you're offering them, you know, the opportunity to sort of look at all the different possibilities that are out there, including in Buddhism. And I guess what I'm curious is, you know, for people that are listening that are, you know, definitely on the fence on any particular, you know, Buddhism gets thrown into a category for them with any other, you know, spiritual, religious, or greater than themselves beliefs. And I'm curious what your thoughts may be on that theory in and of itself, and the idea of a religious or spiritual perspective and a leading opportunity, a leading doorway for somebody that is kind of like on the fence.
Yeah, I love Dalai Lama's always like, you know, there's love. There is love in the world. And how children are raised, we're born so vulnerable and so dependent that literally our life is saved. You know, like mom saves us daily when we're infants. And she doesn't think about it. You know, it's just what she's doing. But it's like we have in our cellular structure this understanding of love and compassion and kindness. And, you know, if there's Buddhism in the world, that's good. There is love in the world. You know, there is love in the world before Buddhism. There's going to be love after Buddhism. And in terms of faiths, it's like this thing how in the West, we really want to approach it in terms of like a philosophy and a spiritual path, like a practice. It's amazing. You know, we always come to that. Maybe because it's something new, but like in the East, it's also practiced like a religion. And people have, you know, their rituals and the way that they support the religious institutions that have grown up. And keep it going, keep it propagating in these other places. But then it crosses over. There's great practitioners and scholars, yogis and panditas. But the essence, again, is loving kindness and being able to envision that going to everyone, being able to be received and activated, you know, that gentleness, that concern for the other, that's just what it's all about.
I like that you went like directly into, you know, the topic of what this show is about is love, and the idea that, you know, regardless of any, you know, it's a difficult question I find myself to answer about spirituality, and for someone that's really on the fence about it and is like, where, you know, show me where this greater power is, or show me like where this purpose, you know, is coming from. And I feel like that's such a simple and beautiful way to just bring it right back to what is love that is innately felt inside of you, regardless if you like it or not.
Yeah. It grows. Sometimes it's very inconvenient.
Yes.
You know?
And how that opportunity, just, you know, that for somebody that's on the fence could really just open up that, open up that little seed of possibility of what could grow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about the concepts of romantic love and spiritual love and your thoughts on that. And maybe we could, after that, segue into the what you brought to share.
Sure. That's really amazing. Part of it, because romantic love, the connection men and women feel for one another is so profound, and there's so much learning, so much potential for healing that can happen within that sphere. And I was very blessed. One of my first tantric teachers was this cat named Fritz, and he was the real deal in terms of having transformed himself, like a living example. He was raised in orphanages and then gangs after having been removed from his violently abusive family at the age of 3, and had gone through a lot of rough stuff. And then when I met him, he's this beautiful, loving family man. He's got all these kids climbing over. He's always this beautiful, mostly sharing being. That's what how he would do it, he says. So it's just sharing being. And very much emphasized the relationship between the men and women as this place where one's efforts towards harmony, that we were the rubber meets the road, you know, is how we get along in relationship. And so I was able to use his vows for getting hitched up, getting married with my lady. And we've been working it, you know, and it's sometimes effortless. And then sometimes it's deeply transformative, because in the primary relationship, what comes up is a recapitulation of your family of origin and the culture, you know, that you were raised in, the familial culture. Those relationships become propensities. They become habits of ways of relating, especially with kids. When kids come in, there is this thing of like, holy cow, you know, I'm sounding like my dad. Do I want to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm saying stuff that would sound just like how my dad said to me. And I didn't like how I felt about it when I was a kid. So
that's your opportunity to transform.
What am I going to work it through? How am I going to work it through? So Fred, that's his other name, Fred Smith. He gave us all these tools and techniques for working it through. And it's been awesome. So I'm in the renunciate kind of position of Buddhism. They say, oh, attachment, you know, it's very bad. You know, we've got to be free of our attachments. But it's our bonds and the bondedness, the connections that we feel with others, where we get the most learning, where we can find the most deepest healing.
Renunciated, is that what you said?
Yeah, renunciation is the Hinayana approach, because a great deal of the Buddhism practiced in the East is monastic. The monks and nuns, they don't have to worry about relationships.
Right.
They just focus, all that extra energy just goes into meditation. And I was seriously looking at that as a path for me, but there was a different, I knew. I dig the ladies too much. it wouldn't be easy.
Yes. Well, I think a lot of us in our community are happy that the path you chose was the other.
Yeah.
We have a few more minutes together, so I would love for you to share what you brought, and so maybe we'd have a chance to reflect on it before
we
end.
Sure. This is the Metta Sutra, which is Buddha's teaching on loving kindness. And from the words of the Buddha, he said, "This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble, not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. I love that one. Just that idea. In gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they're weak or strong, omitting none, the great and mighty, the medium, the short, the small, the seen, the unseen, those living near, those living far away, those born and those yet to be born, may they all be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies, downwards to the depths, outwards unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, sitting or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be a sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born involuntarily again into this world.
How beautiful. It's definitely enlightening to our situation.
Yeah, you are.
Thank you. Could you repeat the title of that for our listeners?
That is the Metta Sutra.
Metta Sutra. Thank you so much, Adam, for joining us and allowing this conversation to be had about spiritual self and love. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We had a short show. We have a short show, but you have an opportunity to call in and ask KZFR to make our show longer. They're on our team, but they want to hear from you. So 895-0131, give them a call during their open hours and let them know that it's time for the love show to go to an hour. We've got so much to talk about. We just begin the conversation each time, and an hour really doesn't do it justice. When you think about it, how much you talk about love on a daily basis, it's really all you talk about. So let's keep talking about it here at KZFR. Thanks again, Adam.
My absolute pleasure. It's been delightful.
Absolutely. And we will be on next week at Tuesday, 5:30, talking about community and love and what that looks like and why it's important to be connected to one's community. You can check us out on SoundCloud as well. We've got the archives up there, usually as promptly as possible. And also, KZFR now has an archive online, so you can check out kzfr.org for their archives. But I'm going to leave you with some Spirit Rap by Asterius, and hopefully open some new eyes to what we're doing here.
Go to Korean dream awake, cellular, centered in my being, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, in this now, with the full support of God, Goddess, the Ascended Master Realm, to include our Ascended Master Self, Father Saint Germain, Sananda, the Holy Mother Mary, Kuan Yin, Goddess of Mercy, Archangel Michael and the Legions, Ashtar and the entire command, Babaji, Raphael, Gabriel, Clan of the Trumpet Angels, Aboriginal and Tribal Shaman, Goddesses of Fortune, Angels of Light, Elohim, Clan of the Serpents, Shiva, all Christ frequencies, all animal totems, elementals of fire, air, water, and earth, all divine beings of light, love, and ascension, named and unnamed, to activate the cells within my being who are your counterparts with the unified power of the One. I decree my highest good always operating in this now. I decree grace and mercy always operating in this now. I invoke, decree, and dream awake the full truth and reality of ascension in this now. I invoke and dream awake with every breath that I breathe the violet fire transmuting my whole being. I invoke and dream awake the full current of ascension in every cell of my being. I am ascended. I invoke and dream awake expanded God consciousness, fully